Welcome to the 77th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. I like to do marathons and triathlons. This week, it's just me and three dogs that may come in and out. I have no interview. It's Memorial Day weekend. And I'd like to reflect a little bit about what that means to me and what it may be to you and your plant-based journey. I'd like to salute any listeners who may have military in their family, who have lost loved ones in the tragedy of various wars along the way. I grew up in a very small town on the border of Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and I remember Memorial Day as a kid in the 70s would always start with a service at the local church, followed by a parade to a small bridge where flowers were thrown into the water and then on to the cemetery where taps was played. I remember specifically one Memorial Day at the church service, and there was a lady there that had recently lost a son in the Vietnam War. And as a child, I didn't really understand much about the Vietnam War or what it meant. But it was just a very sad time and sober experience. I had the family that was in World War II, and I've had family that were in the services, both in Korea and the Navy. And, I'm very proud of my military heritage. I've always been a part of a patriotic family. We always fly a flag. So I'd like to salute all those that have been in the service. It doesn't seem right to say Happy Memorial Day because it's really not. It's a tribute. So we'll make this podcast a tribute to all those that have lost loved ones in the military. Today, however, most Memorial Days are associated with picnics and get-togethers. It's the first long weekend of the summer. Traditionally, people get together and have specific foods, and a lot of that time it's barbecues. And if you're just on your plant-based journey, that might pose a significant problem to you. In the past, in another life, growing up, Memorial Day weekend, as well as 4th of July weekend and Labor Day weekend, the menu was fairly similar. It was ribs and potatoes and corn and baked beans and usually some sort of pie, and oftentimes it was apple pie. That's changed, but now we do riblets, which is a wheat gluten form of seitan, it's seitan made out of wheat gluten in the form of ribs, and we use barbecue sauce. That's one substitute that is pretty similar to, put the quotes, the real thing. Seitan can have the texture of meat. You even need a knife to cut it a little bit, so it can really serve as a really good substitute. You can put it on the grill and go through all the grilling process as you once did with ribs. I think the biggest difference in eating plant-based is there's not that meat heavy, fat heavy meal that you feel so bad after. So the riblets are there. You can have them on the side and you get the texture of the seitan and the ribs, but you're not getting that terribly fat, full, awful feeling. Certainly the baked bean part is very easy. You can make baked beans. Obviously, I never really did like the pork part of baked beans, but there are a lot of good recipes out there with a little bit of maple syrup spices to make good baked beans. Corn on the cob is certainly fair game. We often also did green beans, maybe put some roasted potatoes in there, or roast potatoes in the oven, or baked potatoes on the grill. We like baked potatoes with baked beans on top of them, so the barbecue and the potato all together. Certainly, the summertime salads are all fair game, so pasta salads. We make our pasta salad with mustard and relish and artichokes and a little avocado. There's peppers and onions and chickpeas, cucumbers, tomatoes, olives in our pasta salad. So it's very filling and acceptable to anyone. And as far as the apple pie goes, well, we occasionally still make a pie. We may only use one crust now, make it obviously without lard, but oftentimes we'll make an open pie with a nut-based crust and then more of a tart type filling on top. So, you know, you can get by with the Memorial Day picnic quite easy. Some people transition and they'll use some of the tofurkey or the field roast Franks. I think they're pretty oily, certainly a once-in-a-while thing. If you really need that when you're going to a cookout, wouldn't be a bad thing. The Esselstyns do carrot dogs and put all the fixings on top of carrot dogs. You know, it usually comes down to the toppings are what people like the most. You know, in a hot dog, it wasn't really the hot dog, but there's a lot of ways around that. So I think there's, and then as far as the grill goes, you know, just grilling up a bunch of vegetables if you like, that's always an option on the side, to have a big zucchini and mushrooms and peppers and onions, you know, along with the riblets. So those are good, really good Memorial Day weekend foods. We recently came back from a long weekend at the beach, and, you know, people say, you know, what do you do when you're traveling? It was interesting. There were, my daughter's getting married in the summer, so we had, my friend had a bridal shower for her. So two of the condos were vegan, and the other condo was not vegan. And we just, for the shower, obviously, my friend did it, was vegan, and she did a great spread with, burritos and corn on the grill and, you know, all the fixings for tacos or burritos. And so that was a real easy fare for people. We had guacamole and salsas and vegan cupcakes. So that was easy. The day before the bridal shower, I just took a bunch of the fixings to make various salads. So we had a giant pasta salad. We had my sushi salad, which is my version of vegan sushi, but in a salad form, where I take a nori wrap and cut it up, as well as rice and cucumber and carrots and pepper and wasabi and a little bit of tamari and wasabi, and make a salad that has kind of the fixings of vegetable sushi. The other one that we did was a quinoa tabbouleh, which was quinoa, tomatoes, cucumbers, and parsley with lemon juice topping. So that was a really good salad. And then we had, you know, it's watermelon season in Florida and melon season in Florida, so we had a big fruit salad all the time with watermelon and cantaloupe and mangoes and blueberries. So there was plenty of food to eat for everybody, and you could just kind of pick. So especially when you're at the beach and it's hot, those summertime salads are really good to have around, and everybody enjoys them no matter if you call yourself plant-based or not. My first class started this week. It's a new session. For anybody that's new, I do a nutrition class in my office. There are 6 one-hour sessions, and the first class we talk about the science behind a whole food plant-based diet. And being a cardiologist specifically, I like to look at the endothelial cell and vascular function, and a lot of my patients come to my class, so we talk about how to get their hypertension to go away and how to settle down angina and make that go away. And basically, it is healing the cell. It's healing the endothelium through nitric oxide. So when your endothelial cells, which are the linings of your blood vessel, no longer, or the nitric oxide is severe, that they excrete is severely decreased, then you need an external source of nitric oxide to try to heal the arteries and make the arteries dilate. And the best way about that is to start adding greens to your diet. So we talk about the, you know, as Dr. Esselstyn would say, the kale, Swiss chard, mustard greens, collard greens, cauliflower, any kind of cabbage, broccoli, and so forth as being mandatory in this way of healing yourself. So you know, the idea is to start off right away with four cups of, try to go for four cups of these greens, raw or steamed, and even a little balsamic vinegar is going to even help more to generate arginine, which is going to go and with nitric oxide synthase make nitric oxide. And the other side of that coin is to decrease the oxidative stress that's competing with the nitric oxide synthase. So you want to decrease the animal products, the dairy products, obviously smoking and saturated fat and cholesterol intake. So we talk about how to get those greens and how that works in the first session. I like to do visuals, and I draw a picture of the artery, and we look at the artery, how it starts to clog up, and then how nitric oxide can also go in, and not only does it cause the vessel, the endothelial cell, to and the blood vessel to dilate or expand, so you get four times the amount of blood flow with each, you know, so it's a 4-to-1 ratio. If you look at the physics of a flow through a tube. So if you expand it by one, you get four times the flow. But the nitric oxide also goes into the cell and helps to kind of chew up the foam cells or the cholesterol plaques and some of the byproducts of inflammation so that that vessel wall will gradually settle down and the blockage will actually start to subside or calm down, and the plaque can actually become calcified. Which is interesting because a lot of new diagnosis or screening tests, there's the calcium score. And people will be referred for a calcium score to define whether or not they have coronary artery disease. And the reality of it is you can have significant coronary artery disease and have a low calcium score. You can have a very high calcium score but be completely asymptomatic from your coronary artery disease because the plaques that are calcified in the coronary artery typically are very much more stable than the soft plaques. And it's the soft plaques that were 20% that go on to cause the big heart attack overnight. So, you know, just because you have a low calcium score doesn't mean you're safe if you have risk factors, and especially if you have high cholesterol and eat the standard American diet. On the same token, just because you have a high calcium score doesn't mean you're doomed, because as those plaques start to settle down and they scar down, your calcium score can actually go up. And it's been shown to go up a little bit. So it's not a worrisome thing. Again, you know, your symptoms really drive how you're doing. So if you couldn't walk and then now you can walk without getting any chest pain, obviously things are getting better, but your calcium score might not necessarily reflect that. We always go on to talk about, you know, the endothelial reactivity with respect to oils. Because, you know, olive oil and coconut oil always come up as being thought of as healthy oils. And oftentimes people are using a lot of oils as a substitute for other things in their cooking, and it really leads to a lot of weight gain over time. So they may be eating what they think is fairly healthy, but they're putting all this olive oil on and gaining all this weight, and they're really driving their cholesterol. So we also talk about the University of Maryland study that looked at when young people that are otherwise healthy are given olive oil or canola oil or coconut oil or a hamburger, the same thing happens, is that vasoconstriction occurs in the artery and it lasts for some time. So there's no oil that's really safe in the presence of vascular disease. And when I say vascular disease, I mean hypertension. You weren't born with high blood pressure. It's been around so long that people think that high blood pressure is just a normal sign of aging, but it really is a reflection of diffuse vascular disease and constriction of the arteries. So if you have high blood pressure, then olive oil is not, or any cooking oil is not going to be in your best interest. So you want to eliminate that. And that's kind of always a big shocker the first day in class, kind of a Debbie Downer. So I try to quickly turn it around to some of the good things that, you know, are going to happen. And in my classes, we do a cooking demonstration as well. And the first class, I always make hummus because, to me, that's a couple things that happen. People are worried about what they're going to be putting on their salads, and they're also worried about what they're going to snack on. And again, marketing has had it that hummus has become a health food, but most are not, you know, probably 80-90% of all hummuses out there are not healthy because they have a lot of oils in them, palm oil, olive oil, soybean oil combination, and a lot of those are also genetically modified oils. So they're very high in calories just from the oil content. So if people all of a sudden start to switch to eating lunches with big hunks of store-bought hummus, they won't see any weight loss, and they might not see a whole lot of improvement in their cholesterol because they're taking in so much oil. So I teach them how to make hummus, and you know, I'll give credit to Dr. Esselstyn and his wife for their hummus recipes. I tweak it a little bit. But again, it's chickpeas, but you can make it with any kind of bean. If you're not really fond of garbanzo or chickpeas, you can make it out of butter beans or cannoli beans or even black beans. And then it's a combination of lemon juice and a little bit of mustard and water to kind of thin things out. And I use like a teaspoon of tahini per, you know, small food processor just for a little bit of tahini flavor. And the key is the water and lemon juice, just to thin it out enough that it becomes the right texture. And then you can spice it up any way you want. And if you take fresh salsa and add to homemade hummus, you get kind of a Thousand Island dressing, especially if you put more water to it and maybe a little vinegar to it. You can, you know, put a little dill and go that way and start to make it more into a creamy ranch dressing if you thin it out. You can add more honey mustard to it and make it more of a honey mustard with vinegar when you add to it. The hummus can also be the basis of a sandwich. A lot of people were used to eating, you know, a traditional lunch meat sandwich. So instead, use the homemade hummus and add a bunch of lettuce to it, tomatoes, red cabbage, sprouts, and that makes a good sandwich at lunchtime. Personally, when I have hummus, I just like to put a scoop of my homemade hummus on my greens and my salad with everything else that I have in it, and it's kind of diluted down, again, either with the vinegar or ginger or something into more of a dressing. So I'll either use hummus on my salad, or I'll use a half an avocado on my salad as kind of the basis for dressing. We did make a more of a ranch dressing, and that was out of the Foodie Bar recipe. I've had Timmeri on with from the Foodie Bar way, and she's got some really good dressings. But her ranch dressing has white beans and soaked sesame seeds and lemon juice. And that's a very good dressing. And both of these, both the ranch and the hummus are also good for vegetable dipping. So as a snack, as opposed to chips, you know, I suggest people, you know, always have a bunch of cut up vegetables. So for the demonstration, I brought up a bunch of, you know, I brought some red cabbage boats and some red multicolored little sweet peppers to dip in, cucumbers, carrots, and so forth. So that makes a much better snack than, you know, going down the chip or nut route that this starts to become calorically dense. The other thing that I try to bring up, you know, I can see the look of fear the first day of my class. And sometimes it's more the fear in the men's eyes because I think, you know, the worry of not getting enough to eat. And I think sometimes people are so used to other ways of dieting that they had to calorically restrict themselves, that they were always hungry. So they're kind of bracing themselves for a painful experience. And somebody brought up in class this week, you know, what do we do for snacking? And I was like, well, you know, you need to make sure that you're eating enough at your mealtime so that snacking is not that much of an issue at first. I was trying to think back, you know, when snacking was truly invented, because, you know, certainly way back when people ate three good meals a day and that was it. You know, you got up and had a breakfast and came in and had a big lunch after working and then ate dinner and went to bed shortly thereafter. And gradually dessert came into play, and then, you know, I think weekend chips and whatever came into play, and then the chips and salsa revolution came to be. And, you know, I think snacking became almost more important than mealtime. And, you know, we've developed, you know, again, the chips and salsa and every, you know, the snack aisle in a grocery store, you know, it takes up at least one, if not, you know, two aisles. It's now the snacks are strategically placed in the produce department as well as the snack aisle and on, you know, the ends of every aisle. So it has become the norm to have to snack. So I want to try to get, you know, people back in the habit of eating plenty at mealtime, that they're eating good nutrient-dense food so that snacking is not a huge issue. And then if you do snack, you're starting to eat food that may be part of your meal that's you know, very, again, nutrient-dense, whether it be stuffed mushrooms or I saw on a post where someone scooped out cucumbers, the seeds out of cucumbers, and filled those with hummus to have as snacks. But, you know, again, I like to see people eat big meals and then not have to worry about snacking. And if there's going to be dessert, then I'd like to see it more on the weekend, you know, on a Sunday or something after people have been very busy and outside, and more of a celebration type of thing and a special occasion as opposed to an everyday thing. There's always the question in the first class, you know, the carbohydrate versus protein question. You know, people are afraid of fruit, that they're going to spike their sugar if they're glucose intolerant or they're already diabetic. And so they've been geared towards being low carb type people a lot of the times. So, you know, I dispel that myth right away. I like to, you know, point to athletes that are fruitarians that are quite successful. I like to point to eating the whole fruits as opposed to, you know, to eating, you know, drinking juice and or drinking the fruits. And the smoothie thing, you know, I mean, I think smoothies are great to hydrate, but it's really gotten out of hand with some of the smoothie bars and things, so that we need to, the thought is that you have to put protein powders and almond milk and all kinds of additives into smoothies. You know, to make them some sort of supplement or even add supplements to them. And I really like people to get away from the protein powders. I do a smoothie in the morning, usually after I run, but again, it's part of my hydration after running. But it's mainly kale or spinach with, you know, some fruit, a banana, blueberries, and maybe some other fruit depending on the day, depending on how much I want to hydrate. This time of year, I especially like watermelon in the smoothies, but then I just add water. I never add any protein powder. I do put my flaxseed in there if I'm not going to put it in an oatmeal. But that's really the only reason to have a smoothie, or maybe to have it, you know, as an afternoon snack. I think if people are hungry, or an evening snack, as long as it's kind of predominantly vegetable base with a little bit of fruit in there for sweetness, but not, you know, over the top fruit. If you're trying to lose weight, again, you're better off eating the whole fruit so that you can get the, you know, the fiber and delay, you know, gastric emptying from being full. So I like to see people eat the whole fruit. But, you know, then if you're going to eat the whole fruit, I still don't think that that's the problem as far as your caloric intake. It's the other things. When people can't lose weight, it's almost always bread, flour, pasta products, and oils. And, you know, the other thing that I do is I bring in samples of whole grains for people to see the first day. And specifically, I bring in wheat berries in a tall glass jar. Because I think when you see the visual of the wheat berries and then you imagine they're ground down and to make whole wheat flour, and how small that would get from, you know, the wheat berries that I bring into the jar, people start to realize just how many calories flour has. And they also realize that it's not going to take near the space that the wheat berries with all their density goes. So again, I'm stressing that, you know, it's okay to have the whole grains as long as you're having the whole grains, not milled down into some processed flour that you just give a different name. So it's, you know, pasta is really pasta for the most part. It's just what grain you start with. So I want people to eat the whole grain. So I bring in the wheat berry to show people. I bring in some fruca, and I bring in teff for people to look at, barley, farro. And I also, you know, want people to not be afraid of corn, you know, so to make homemade polenta as a basis or to serve with soup. I still think that's better than, again, eating a bunch of pasta. So that's, you know, kind of where we are with the grain. So it's good for people to see and to look at them and to, you know, feel confident of giving them a try. I really like grains in my salad as well. So if I have leftover rice, I may throw it in the salad. If I have leftover the quinoa, I love the quinoa as a quinoa tabbouleh. And you can even sprout that and soak it overnight and sprout it for a couple days. And that makes a good salad as well as traditionally cooked quinoa. I brought in black rice, which is really a seed. You can sprout that and put that in a salad, which is also very, very good. And so, you know, I want them to see, again, that the whole grain, what we're talking about when we say whole grain, because people get so confused that they think that, you know, the store bread on the shelf is a whole grain bread because it says whole wheat. And it couldn't be further from the truth. The other thing people get confused with is things like pumpernickel bread, which is, you know, molasses and sugar and just dyes to make a bread that's really just white bread. It's kind of like that Superman ice cream that my daughter used to get, you know, when she was really little. It was all different colors, but it was just vanilla ice cream with probably terrible dyes in it. Thank God she doesn't like that anymore. It does really help when I talk about protein, that I am plant-based and I do endurance athletes. So they feel, my students feel comfortable early on that, you know, if I'm not worried about my protein intake, that they probably aren't going to be that worried about their protein intake. And again, we talk about their recommended daily allowance is really 7%. And if you add 2% standard deviation, it makes it 10%, but you don't have to worry. So again, it's like 40 grams for women, 50 grams for men. You know, if you're a little bit more active, you can add, you know, 10 grams of protein, but there's certainly no reason to go and add a bunch of protein to your diet. I like the example on Dr. Goldhammer's clinic out of True North, you know, the water fast people for 6 weeks. And granted, they're not moving around. And the reason why they don't move around is they don't want them to burn protein as fuel. But if your activity level is low, you're going to burn fat for fuel after you don't have any carbohydrates. And certainly people have plenty of carbohydrates on a whole food plant-based diet. So you're not going to catabolize protein as long as you're getting in enough calories. And so, you know, it's not a worry whatsoever. We touch on the you know, the essential amino acids where people complete protein, you know, a lot of carnivores and people of the paleos, like you want a complete protein, which is, again, all mythical. Your body's much smarter. You know, it's amazing you went through your life up until the point where you became plant-based and you weren't worried about your amino acid content. But now all of a sudden people are worried about their amino acid content, whether they're getting all complete protein. But your body knows enough, and for the most part, most of the proteins it makes on a daily basis comes from amino acids that have been broken down as opposed to what's been consumed. So you're really not using what you eat every day to replenish your stores. You're really breaking down and recombining, so it's not an issue. It's more of an issue, you know, again, to stress the fiber content of things, because most Americans are fiber deficient. So I want people to aim for a really high fiber diet. So if you're aiming for, you know, a certain amount of food every day, you want to get as much fiber in that food as possible. So by eliminating the animal products, you have a lot more room for fiber that is much more protective than any protein ratio would have been. So, you know, I make sure that I bring that up, because I think that, you know, people need to know right away, because when they come to class, you know, there's six sessions and they're just starting out, and somebody's going to grill them when they come from class and they're trying to go out to dinner with their friends, or they're trying to, you know, eat with their family, and it's like, where do you get your protein, and, you know, how are you going to be healthy? And so they need to have those basic answers up front so that they feel confident and continue the quest. The other thing that I do is, this course is six sessions long, but it's every other Wednesday. So they get, the reality, it's more of a 3-month course as opposed to just a 6-week course. And I think that gives people a lot more time to kind of ease their way into a whole food plant-based diet. It gives them time for a support. You know, we also have a meetup group in town that I encourage people to join, that they can do some potlucks, and we do some, you know, go out to some restaurants. You know, the first class is a little bit daunting, and you can see the fear in people's eyes, but by the time they leave, they're starting to, you know, feel like they've learned something, and at least they have some arsenal to go out and, you know, face their friends and face their family of what they're going to do. The other thing that, you know, I always bring up front is grandchildren, because Florida is an area where retired people are, older individuals, and a lot of my students, you know, have grandkids, and that's a big way to fall off the wagon, because the grandkids come to town or they have grandkids living with them. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is that, one, you know, I always say, you know, did your parents or grandparents ask you what you wanted to eat? No. Back in the old days, food was put on the table as nourishment, and people sat down and ate it because they were hungry, and that was going to be their meal, and they know that they ate that meal, and there wasn't anything coming until the next meal. So it really wasn't an issue. But since children have been marketed to on the television, you know, with, you know, 4 or 5, 8 hours of television, that now they start to want to vote as far as what's coming in. And of course, you know, the toys associated with some of the fast food restaurant and the parties that are held at the fast food restaurant, they become indoctrinated at a very young age. But again, I really do think that, you know, if you're trying to become healthy, then why do you want your grandchildren to be unhealthy? So if you start to put that food out there, then at least they'll get a taste, and they'll come around. Their taste buds are going to change even more quickly than yours are, because they're young and, you know, things are just developing. So put things down. And the other thing I say, don't talk about it. You know, when you make a casserole with cabbage and tomatoes and beans and rice, it's a casserole. It doesn't have to be labeled as a plant-based whole food casserole, and we're not having any meat tonight casserole. It's just a casserole, and that's just part of dinner. And nobody will really question it unless you start bringing up and dwelling on it and, you know, start talking about, you know, what maybe is obviously missing from the meal. So I think that's, and if there's plenty of food to eat, then people don't really miss, you know, the meat portion. It's just if there's this giant hole on their plate, do they start to think about, you know, what's missing, or they're being deprived. I don't want people to feel like they're being deprived. I want them to feel like they're getting extra and allowed more food for, you know, their for what they're getting for their meal. I also think it's very important when people are transitioning into a whole food plant-based diet that they see what's available. So I bring pictures of my what I've had for the previous week, some of the dishes I prepare. I encourage people to go on Instagram while I post my food, and you can follow Forks Over Knives. You can follow Rip as he posts food, and various other people that they post what they eat, and it looks really, really good, and people get ideas. And if you've cooked at all, then people will tweak things to make it like they like it. So, you know, it's a process, but when people start to have fun with preparing their meals or creating different dishes or experimenting, then I think that they start to enjoy it and are more apt to do it. I also encourage people not to forget their dog companions. My dogs love zucchini and squash and carrots and sweet potato and acorn squash and papaya, so I used to cook all this and be worried about raw, but for the most part now I just chop up a squash for them to have on their kibble, or they'll have zucchini and carrots. They love papaya as dessert, and so it's much nicer that you don't have to worry about you know, these terrible additives that people put in these companies put in these dog treats. If you start to look at it, it's just terrible. And you know, I always notice when I'm running, I run with my German Shepherds. And, you know, my German Shepherds are all obviously, you know, lean and a good weight, and you know, they run every day and they eat healthy. But you see people walking these morbidly obese dogs, and, you know, the people are kind of waddling and their dogs are kind of waddling. And I feel really bad because, you know, people will do anything for their dog companions, and they're buying all these treats, and they're very expensive. There's a tremendous amount of money put forth, but these things are just as unhealthy as what people give their grandkids. So, you know, I'd encourage you to look when you're, you know, out and about and see the grandkids and see people's dogs. And you can see that there's this pattern of, you know, you're going to feed something because you love it, but they're getting this terrible quality snack food. You know, it's either in the form of dog treats or fast food for children. And we've just, you know, really been marketed to the point where we're blind when it comes to our health, respect to this, you know, snack foods and what we consider, you know, health foods. I was given a sample from a company. I'm not going to mention the name, but it's just really, there are all these vegan supplements and protein powders and candies and drink powders, and this box is it's beautiful. It's a beautiful box. It has strawberries and pomegranates and basil on it, and it says non-GMO, and it says pure and beneficial and certified vegan, no artificial sweeteners and no artificial flavors. But again, it's still all artificial. You know, there's not a vegetable in here. Everything is, you know, dried protein powder in it or candy. So, you know, I this marketing thing, just because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy. Oreos and Twizzlers are vegan, as well as some of these health food candies. And it always kind of bums me out with, you know, our local health food stores that, you know, you have a small produce department and you have a fairly small frozen food section. And then there's this huge junk aisle, just like a regular grocery store. And then there's this huge, all these huge supplement aisles. You know, again, you know, I urge people to go for the real thing. Eat the pomegranate, eat the apple, eat the strawberries, eat the pears and the grapes, and don't be afraid of those. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense when you start to think about it, that if you can dry something up and make it into a powder, it's going to make it better. There's the interaction of the whole fruit that's associated with everything else and the whole vegetable that you can't replace. So, you know, go for the, and I'm sure the stuff is really expensive. So you can, you know, buy a whole lot of vegetables for the amount that you'll pay to get this dried, you know, convenience powders or drink mixes. So drink water and eat fruit is, you know, my message when it comes from there. The other caveats that I gave to my patients, you know, at the end, it's like a couple simple things. If you have high blood pressure, drink hibiscus tea. You know, a couple cups of hibiscus tea is going to lower your blood pressure over a short course of time to pretty much to the effect of a medication. Apple cider vinegar, a tablespoon in water, you know, about 8 ounces of water twice a day, is going to lower your blood sugar. Simple things. You know, adding ginger and turmeric to your food is going to decrease your inflammation. Eating that stalk of pineapple that's in the center, that core, throwing that into your, you know, your smoothies or your stir fry or on the grill. There's a lot of anti-inflammatory products as far as helping your joints. So those are all simple things and cheap things that you can do to promote your health that can get you off of medications. Before I cut it off today, I do want to thank everyone that sent me an email. I do appreciate all the kind words. It's nice to know that people are out there listening and enjoy the podcast. I was a little bit worried about last week's episode recording the class because I wasn't sure about the sound quality. I've had little mic problems in the past and or in the recent past, but things it seemed to be taken pretty well. It is unique what we do in the class. I really do like it and enjoy it. Sometimes I feel a little bit weird. You know, I'm a cardiologist and I practice, you know, regular medicine and see people and do exams. And then now I've twisted and I'm, you know, teaching cooking. And sometimes I think I've, you know, maybe dumbed myself down, but other times I think that the pharmaceutical industry has dumbed we as physicians down so that, you know, I feel like I'm coming to my senses. And certainly the success that I am seeing with my patients and the students in the class makes me very happy. There are students that are even, you know, people are meeting each other out in the community, you know, even like the produce department in Walmart, and they're starting to help each other and pay it forward. So, you know, that's always something that makes me very happy. And certainly if anybody has any questions, you know, I'd love to entertain their questions. I'm happy to try to help. People are starting to come to my office to see me as a patient because I am plant-based and supportive. And my goal is to get people off of their medicines as opposed to put people on their medicines. And I do feel very strongly that we can reverse most of this. You know, we can get people off the majority of their blood pressure medicines, their diabetic medications, and make them live in the healthier and make their angina go away. And, you know, the next step for me is to make sure that people don't fall off the wagon and that they have enough support going forward. And, you know, I'm trying to figure that out so that people, can keep at it. So I, you know, again, I'll encourage anybody to send me a question or suggestion, how they would like to, you know, keep things going forward with their support. But I do think that this podcast does help. I'm also on Instagram at Jamila Delaney, where I post what I eat. I'm on Facebook, so I'll Facebook friend anybody. My email is jamiedelaney@gmail.com. It's J-A-M-I. If you want to ask a question. The website is Dr. Delaney, spelled out. It's D-U-L-A-N-E-Y. If you want to go on there and look, and you know, if you're in town or in Florida and you want to stop by and sit in the class, that's great too. I'd encourage that. And you know, maybe we'll progress and get these video to, you know, in the future. But I'm enjoying it. I'm learning, and you know, if you've encountered an issue or you know, I had an episode this week where I had a patient that is actually, I actually see both the husband and the wife, and the husband has lost weight and he's plant-based, and he talks about when he falls off the wagon, you know, if grandkid comes by or they, you know, their son came over and they decided to fix hot dogs for some crazy reason, real hot dogs as opposed to even plant-based hot dogs. Yet his wife had actually gained weight when I saw her in her appointment, and she, you know, still didn't feel like she was eating anything, or she was just eating salad, so she didn't have any idea where the weight was coming. And I think there are people that do really have trouble recognizing what they eat or recognizing the caloric density of what they eat. And maybe have a, you know, that rose-colored glasses ability to see or remember what they ate on the good days, but forget what they ate on the bad days. So if anybody has any insight or experience with, you know, having weight issues but not being able to see what they're doing wrong or see what they're eating or being frustrated, I'd love to hear from you because, you know, those are the people that I think really, really need some help and support. And you know, I want to be able to approach people and not offend them as well with this journey. But it, you know, it can be very difficult to realize what you're doing. And sometimes it's just confusion. You know, there's so many hidden calories with processed food, with oil in them. And when you go out to dinner, you can, negate so many things by the oil that you're given that you don't see. So, you know, a lot of it may be that. But then a lot of it is just this, these short falls off the wagon where people eat the bad things or eat the wrong things or too much of the wrong things. Just kind of brush that under the rug, so to speak, and then it catches up with them. So I would be encourage anybody's insight or, you know, to share with me their problems. It can help everybody. So I think I'll cut it off for now. Enjoy your Memorial Day, your long weekend. Make it healthy. Take time to maybe reflect a little bit on the service that others have had to make this country great. Fly your flag. One thing I can always remember is, my parents always wear red, white, and blue, especially on these holidays. And my mom would always send my dad to a golf tournament, you know, all decked out in red, white, and blue. And he would come back and he would play, you know, some of his worst golf in his great red, white, and blue outfit. And, you know, he kind of blamed it on the outfit. But, you know, wear your red, white, and blue this weekend and give a nod or a salute to somebody that's in the military. And if you were, thank you for your service. And I do appreciate you. Have a good week.